You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 116 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this evening by Annalise. Annalise, welcome.
Hi.
And thanks so much for coming on. We are going to talk about your son Jack and his Hirschsprungs story. So I guess entirely up to you where you'd like to start.
Jack is almost five now, so I had never heard of Hirschsprungs disease, and it wasn't even on our radar even after he was born. But do you want me to just tell his whole story from the beginning?
Please, yeah.
Okay, well, Jack was... We knew he had something called duodenal atresia or duodenal, depending on how you want to say it. But we didn't know to what extent, if it was just a partial blockage of his intestines, the part right between the stomach and the small intestine. And we found that out at our anatomy scan for him when he was around 20 weeks for gestation. So that was a big shock for us. He's our first child. And then we went to our follow-up meeting 4 weeks later to kind of get in there with a better ultrasound, make a game plan, because he would likely need surgery after being born. And then they're like, well, we're not going to talk about surgery anymore because we're just going to take you and admit you into the hospital, because they thought I was going to have Jack that day at 24 weeks for whatever reason. I was looking like I was having like cervical insufficiencies. But so that was another roller coaster for us with him. Luckily, he stayed in there. He stayed put until 28 weeks. So I also luckily had family in town. My dad and my stepmom were in town, and my sister was staying with us as well. And I don't know if you ever watched the movie Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Have you? It's pretty funny. It's kind of like a little spin-off spoof of The Odyssey. You should watch it. But we watched that really late, and everyone went to bed, and then I woke up a couple hours later, and I was going into labor, and my labor was really fast. So I had texted them before we left being like, oh, you know, I'm having contractions, like I'll probably just go in and they'll try to slow it down and hopefully we'll be home later. But I got there and they're like, you're at an 8. And of course, Jack was breech, so I had an emergency C-section. So then I texted them back at 5 in the morning with pictures of, you know, Jack. Like, oh, he's here. So that was, you know, he is a character, and his whole birth story is also like he is a character. But because he was born at 28 weeks, he was still too small to have his first surgery to fix that atresia. So I can't remember the goal of how many grams they wanted him to be at, but I mean, he was born at 160 grams, I think. So like 2 pounds, 5 ounces.
Wow.
So he was a little guy. You would never know now. I mean, he's still skinny, but he, you know, we were very lucky, and a lot of the premature stuff, a lot of premature struggles that happen when they're so little, we didn't have happen. So he didn't have any brain bleeds. His lungs were fairly strong, because when they admitted me at 24 weeks, they gave me those steroid shots that help mature the lungs a little faster. And so I think that helped him when he was born at 28 weeks. Anyway, so after about a month, he got big enough to have his first surgery. And it went well. His scar for that looks great. And the reason why this is important for his story is because, you know, normally they find out about Hirschsprungs within the first couple days of life, right? Because they're not passing the meconium and they're not pooping. But Jack wasn't even eating anything for the first 30 days of his life. He was on IV nutrition because they didn't know if he had like a full like disconnect or if it was just like a little blockage. And they don't want to mess with, you know, possibly getting neck, which is like the necrotizing enterocolitis, I think.
Yes.
And so after his surgery, it was, you know, the funny joke of waiting for poop to happen. You know, I'd come in every day and be like, has he pooped yet? And you're like, no. And then all the other parents and the NICU are like, oh my gosh, did Jack poop yet? Like, no, what about your kid? No, not yet. So, you know, early introduction to talking about poop often. And then eventually he did finally poop, and it was a lot. And like, they were also giving him like laxatives, I think, and like glycerin and all that to try to get him to poop. And they did give us a little card that has like a little poop emoji on it. And it says like, I had my first poop. And I wish I should have grabbed that, but it took him a long time to poop. And so I joke about how, you know, he didn't poop for like 79 days or something like that. And then once he started pooping, it was just like he wouldn't stop. So it went from nothing to everything. And then by that time, he was also ready to go home. So, you know, he wasn't eating by mouth either. You know, later we found out he had Hirschsprung. So, of course, he didn't want to eat. He was so backed up, the poor guy. So he came home with an NG tube and we would just pump his stomach full of food. But by the time we got home with him, because he was in the NICU for 79 days. And he came home around his due date. And he was like pooping in the hospital. And by the time we got home, he had kind of like stopped pooping. And then you get into the issue of, oh, for newborns, they can poop 12 times a day all the way to once every like 12 days. And that can be normal. And so he was also our first child. So I didn't know what was normal and I didn't have anything to compare it to. And so he did stop pooping and he was very gassy and a very grunty baby. A poor guy. Looking at it now, I feel so bad, but we didn't know. So eventually it would go like 12 days without him pooping. And anytime we would feed him, he would just like get so mad. And I remember my mother-in-law being like, this isn't supposed to happen. Like, babies are supposed to be happy after they eat and like, you know, relax. And Jack would just like scream and, you know, you could tell he was very uncomfortable. And so, of course, we were talking with his pediatrician and she would say the thing, well, this could be normal. And then the other thing, he was on breast milk. I was pumping for him. And usually like breast milk poop is, you know, that yellowy, orange, seedy. And his was never like that. It was, you know, dark brown and like greenish and it really stunk. And I didn't know why. And the pediatrician was like, yeah, that's not as normal, but it still can be normal. And I think we were so close to finding out, like, okay, there's something really not right, because she's like, he is bloated. You know, if it keeps happening like this, like, I want to get some imaging, but we weren't at that point yet. And then also, like, he was born premature, so they were doing growth charts that were like 3 months ahead of where, like, he was supposed to be an October baby, but he was born in July. So he was getting growth charts for July babies instead of October babies. So he was like not even on the growth charts. He was, you know, under 0th percentile, basically. So I think, you know, that was another factor of not finding out sooner. And he still wouldn't eat by mouth. We're still doing the NG tube. And around Christmas, so he came home in October, and we went to visit my family in Arizona for Christmas. And we were there, and I feel so bad because looking back at pictures, you know, I could tell, like, he was just really skinny. He did not look very well. Like, his eyes were kind of sunken in, and he kind of has these little divots like me anyway, the little folds, but they looked like really sunken in. And he was starting to like throw up more after eating. And this was 2021. So it was around COVID time. And a lot of us had started to get sick. It probably because of COVID. And then he started to have leakage from his ears. So we're worried about a eardrum rupture. So we went into the ER because I didn't really have an urgent care. And I had a nephew who was dealing with a lot of ruptured eardrums. And so she's like, oh, I would just take him in. So we went in and they're like, oh yeah, his ears are totally fine, but he looks really bloated. And I'm like, he's always this bloated. Like, this is his normal. He has a nice, cute little puppy belly. And they took an x-ray. And I wish I had it. I could send you a picture of it. But I was like, are those his lungs? Because his colon was like totally into like his chest cavity. Like, it had to have been affecting his breathing and everything. It's a miracle he didn't perforate a bowel, that he didn't have a really scary case of enterocolitis, or that he went into, like, he had sepsis, because it was just so full. And they're like, no, that's his colon. Those are not his lungs. You know, I'd never seen an x-ray. I've seen many x-rays since, so I can read them a little bit better now, but it was crazy. And so then they had some surgeons come and try to use the catheter to try to give him a colonic flush, like an irrigation. Well, there's a lot of different terms for that. And then they're like putting it in, and it just like shot all the way like across the room. It like got on the doctors, got on the walls, and they just kind of laughed and were like, yep, that's classic Hirschsprungs. Like, he definitely has something going on. And so since we were in Arizona, I didn't want to do like a ton of tests, because I really love our hospital that we're by now in Utah. We're at Primary Children's Hospital, which, you know, people come from surrounding states just to be seen there. And one of the surgeons that we were speaking with had actually trained with one of the GI surgeons at Primary Children's. So he was familiar with them. He was familiar with the team. And Primary Children's has a really great colorectal clinic. I've loved working with them. But so then they like sent us home with trying to do flushes, and also starting doing flushes at the hospital. All of a sudden, Jack wanted to eat his bottles. And, you know, we were able to take out his NG tube because we were finally clearing things out. A poor kid wasn't so bloated and backed up anymore. So we did meet with our doctors in Utah, and they wanted us to start doing, you know, multiple flushes a day, which was really hard. And then at that point, I stopped pumping because it was so much work. I mean, for anyone who has ever had to pump breast milk, like, it is a full-time job. Like, you're always pumping, you're dealing with storing all your milk, and then all the cleanup of your parts. Like, it is, for me, when a mom is like, oh, I'm just pumping, I'm like, what do you mean just? Like, that's like the ultimate labor of love. It's so much work. And then adding on, like, having to do the irrigations multiple times a day, it was just too much. And one of my sisters was like, you know, it's okay, you can stop pumping, like, you did awesome. And I really, you know, I struggled with fertility. I had Jack early, but I did have a good milk supply. So I had plenty of milk in the freezer. Like, we had bought like a big freezer just to be able to put a bunch of breast milk away. Plus I had the 30 days where he wasn't even eating any milk. So I finally stopped pumping so that I could just focus on all of Jack's medical stuff. And we tried so hard, but, you know, it was two weekends in a row. Of course, it always happens on a weekend when you can't just like call the clinic and have them, you know, just do like a walk-in. And so there was two weekends in a row where we ended up in the ER because Jack was really fussy. He was throwing up. He just like didn't seem like he was doing well. And then after the second time, the doctor was like, you know what? I think we should really just give him a colostomy. Like, his colon was just so stretched out that like we couldn't, like, trying to get the catheter in, it just like kept, it just was not working for us. And so that was like scary to think, oh my gosh, now I'm going to have to figure out how to deal with the colostomy. Like, will this affect his crawling, his development, all this stuff? But it actually ended up being like the best thing that we did for him because he really started to thrive after getting his colostomy. So he was 6 months old when he got that colostomy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And, you know, I joke about how I'm like an unofficial nurse now because I can place an NG tube. I know how to deal with colostomies and like help with the skin on colostomies. All these things that I never thought I would learn. And I'm just grateful that I really had an awesome anatomy school teacher in high school so that I actually paid attention and wanted to like do well in the class because I loved her. So shout out to Mrs. Blackburn from Mountain View High School. Because then even just having the doctors talk to me about all these different things, like, I'm like, oh, yes, I know what that is. I know these basic terms. So, I mean, basic for doctors, but not really basic for everyone else. So that was a nice little journey. And people were like, oh, my gosh, I bet it's so hard having colostomy. And really, for us, in some ways, it was easier than dealing with diapers. And in other ways, yes, it was hard. So we were lucky and we didn't have like a ton of skin issues around his stoma. And for people who don't know, the stoma is just like the part of the intestine that is outside of the body. And I was able to like really keep his skin around his stoma clean and clear, and we didn't ever really have really bad rashes or anything to deal with. And we did end up buying a whole bunch of extra bags because so you have to do something with the colostomy bag called like burping the bag, which, you know, is so pleasant. But basically the gas gets trapped in the bag, so you just have to open it every so often to let the gas out. And, you know, with Hirschsprung's, I feel like he's a little more gassy anyway.
definitely.
So, yeah. And even when we had the bags that, you know, were supposed to help let gas escape a little bit easier, we still had to do it. And we bought more bags, too, because if there ever was, like, a really full bag, we did a two-piece system for him. So he would have, like, a, like basically a giant bandage. And then it had a circle that was kind of like a clip-in piece where you'd grab a bag and you could clip it in. So if you ever had a really full bag, we would just replace the whole bag. And that was like easier than trying to, you know, take it off and clean it out and all that. And that worked great for us. And so in a lot of ways, it's like, oh, whatever I have to change is diaper. It's just like a wet diaper. And then, you know, the poop is already all in a bag for me if I need to throw it away. But if you have ever dealt with a colostomy blowout, I'm like, those blowouts are the worst because they kick everywhere, especially, you know, a six-month-old on their tummy a lot. It's just like all over. It's insane. But he did really well. And since he was born early, we also were having services from like our local early intervention for, you know, physical therapy, occupational therapy, feeding therapy. So he was receiving all these services and he was delayed in some of his like gross motor and stuff. But I don't think that that was tied to having a colostomy bag, because I know I see a lot of parents worried about like, oh, is this going to affect their ability to crawl or do tummy time? And I was nervous about that, but he really didn't seem to care. Like, even just like being on his tummy, laying on his stoma didn't bother him. And, you know, I mean, he didn't officially walk till he was two. And I think part of that was like a stubbornness thing. But, you know, he still was able to just be a normal baby, a normal kid type of thing. And so then he was finally gaining weight. He got back on the growth charts. I thought he was chunky, but now I really do have a super chunky baby. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Jack was not chunky. But I remember sending videos to my mother-in-law being like, look, Jack's getting chunky. But really, he was just looking healthy. And he had his colostomy for 6 months, and then we went to primaries for his reversal and his pull-through surgery. So they had already taken out most of the affected colon and, like, kind of done the testing to see where that stop line of where his intestines were healthy versus unhealthy, or, like, was it aganglionic?
Yes, aganglionic cells, sort of where the, so effectively, yeah, you sort of keep going up until you find them.
Yeah. And it was interesting. You know, you picture just like a flat straight line of like, here's where it does have the cell and here's where it's missing. But they're like, no, it's like a candle, you know, it like drips down with the wax. So it's like, you know, you could find cells here, but then you go just around and it's like not there. So they had done most of that when they were giving him his colostomy. And so his surgery was fairly quick. And I mean, having to do irrigations is not fun for anyone involved. Like, I hated doing it for Jack, because, you know, we have one parent or one person like holding your child down, and he was young enough that he doesn't fully understand, like, hey, this, I know this really sucks, this is not fun, but it is going to help you feel better. Like, it's going to help your tummy feel better. Like, he couldn't understand that. And so, like, having to do that, and it also just, it's like such a violating thing, like having to put something up your child's bum. Like, you just, it's just not a fun experience for anyone. And so that I already didn't like. And you know, my husband would travel often for work. So it was always crazy. Like, we've had neighbors come, I've had family, I've had friends who are nurses come help me when my husband has been out of town. But I became the expert of it, right? And then, so after his surgery, you know, they have to do the anal dilations. And that for me was the absolute hardest thing, the worst thing, because again, it feels like you're violating your child and you hate seeing them like feel that pain. And also for him, it's like you would insert it and he'd be freaking out. And then you could just like see him totally disassociate, which was just heartbreaking. But then you don't want any issues to happen later. So of course you're doing it because, you know, you don't want to cause pain that lasts even longer. So just a heads up for parents who are going to have to go through that. It is not fun. It is horrible. But we did it. And his like scar tissue and everything has been always looking great. So do it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you deal with the crazy wicked diaper rash, because he was still in diapers at this time. And I remember trying to like prep his skin. That was like a waste of time. It like the diaper rash just, I also feel like I'm a diaper rash expert now. For when I have friends who are like, oh my gosh, my baby's bum is like so sore. And I'm like, well, first of all, that is nothing. Just look at a Hirschsprung's kiddo after having a pull through surgery. But, you know, then I have all these tips and things of how to help that diaper rash. But so we dealt with that, of course. And luckily, he had his pull through in the summertime. So we did have a lot of outdoor free bum to the air time to help. And I still had a lot of breast milk. So I would give him breast milk baths to like help with that. A lot of breast milk that I didn't put in the freezer early enough or it had thawed and, you know, so I couldn't feed it to him. So I had all the, I mean, I still think I have some breast milk for him.
So that's already dirt.
Did a lot. So
yes, I did a lot. I mean, he had it for like the first 9 months of life, which is pretty crazy. And then, you know, after all the diaper rash stuff, then we entered into the phase of trying to balance out if he needed, you know, more laxatives or more fiber or both, which, you know, anyone with Hirschsprung's, like, that is a whole journey trying to figure out the perfect little setup for your body. And it's hard because every single person is different. So just something that worked for us doesn't mean it's going to work for somebody else. And then again, we're still doing all the flushes and after his pull-through surgery site was healed enough. And, you know, we tried X-Lax for him, the little chocolate squares. We tried Senna. We tried a few different things that I remember it was hard getting him to take it because he's, you know, one around this time. And, you know, he did like medicine, but it was like the like super flavored medicine that, you know, we're all against now these days. And he did the best with the X-Lax chocolates, you know, because it was a little chocolate. Yeah. But, you know, he would just get like really bad diarrhea. And so it was like trying to find like, oh, does he need half a square? Does he need to do it every other day? And we got to the point where we were doing it like every other day. And then eventually we went to, like, if he went a day without pooping, then I would give him X-lax that night so that we didn't have anything getting backed up. Because then, like, we're still dealing with bad diaper rash because his poop just ends up being softer. And so it was just like a lot for his system. And trying to get fiber in that kid was just like so hard. I mean, we tried Metamucil. There was a company that does food preservation stuff, and they have pectin without citric acid. And I really wanted to find a pectin without citric acid because, you know, he seems so sensitive to, you know, fruits and stuff that had a little more acidic properties. And then just reading in all the Hirschsprung's groups, you know, some people just were really against having the citric acid and pectin, but it was hard to find, especially at the time. And so I wish I had the company's name off the top of my head, but I had emailed them saying like, hey, my son has Hirschsprung's. The community has like mentioned you a few times. Like, could I possibly buy some? And they sent me this really big sample and it lasted me a really long time. I think we actually have a little bit of it left.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
But they're just really awesome about it, because I think they only sold things in like really large bags because it's, you know, food preservation on like a larger scale, not really like for homes. But like still trying to get him to take it. It's like you're trying to get them to take it fast so it doesn't really get all gelatinous and thick. But then, you know, you're trying to find out like, oh, should I put it in juice and have him drink it? Should I try to mix it in applesauce or yogurt? You know, just trying seriously anything you can just to get your little kid to take it. And I'm like, just down it. Like, just don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And that did help, but, you know, it was hard to be consistent with it because I would make some for him and he would start to eat it. And then he would just be like, I don't want it anymore. So anyway, but we did get to a point where he, just with like diet and trying to get more fiber in his diet, you know, so switching, like maybe we don't eat white bread as much, we're gonna get more whole grain, so add in that fiber. Better cereal options that are whole grain cereals rather than, you know, your classic, you know, tasty and delicious, you know, Fruity Pebbles or whatever, which, side note, is rough on a Hirschsprung's digestive system. So we dealt with all that, and we were really lucky because we got to a point where he doesn't need a daily laxative anymore. But if he does go a little bit without pooping, we do have it on hand to give it to him, just to help keep things moving. And I think we ended up using, it's one of the pills, and it's like a really small dose. But it's been a minute since we've had to use it. So I want to say it starts with a D. I don't know. But he, just like any other laxative, was just too intense for his system. So we ended up going with like a, is it like Ducolax or something, is more gentle for him. And, you know, he has since graduated from the colorectal clinic, like last year, I believe. So we just go see them once a year now. just to, you know, get his x-ray, make sure things are going well. And I know it's more common for Hirschsprung kiddos to potty train later. And also it's just normal for boys to potty train later. Yeah. So I had another baby this last June. And Jack was still in diapers when she came home. And I, you know, I tried so many things to get Jack to want to go to the bathroom, but he takes after both me and his father and is very stubborn. So he, like, I tried bribery. I tried the, like, just don't have him wearing any pants or underwear type of thing. Like, so many things. I got him a toddler toilet because I'm like, well, maybe he's scared of the tall normal toilet. And, you know, his colorectal doctor's like, well, you should have a seat for them too, because, you know, toilets are not made for little bodies. So, and then we also got a bidet hose attachment because the doctor was like, well, I, with the toddler potties, I really didn't want to have to buy little bag inserts. I mean, I'm not perfect, but I try to be a little kinder to the environment. And, you know, Jack's already been in diapers for forever, so sorry, Mother Earth. But I really didn't want to do the bags. And she's like, well, you could just get a bidet attachment. Like, that's what I did for my kids. And that has actually been really helpful because now when Jack does have like smears or accidents, like it's already attached to the toilet, I can like spray out his underwear. I've had sisters be like, why don't you just throw it away? And I'm like, listen, he has Hirschsprungs. We do with this almost daily. Like, I can't afford to just buy him new underwear every single week. And, you know, granted, some accidents are bigger than others, but then I don't get grossed out that I'm like trying to clean out his underwear in a sink, you know? Anyway, so it wasn't until shortly after our daughter Juniper was born that all of a sudden he was interested in using the toilet. So we're like, okay, we are hopping on this train. He's ready. And he did pretty well. But yeah, the poop was a struggle. Like, it's hard because he can't explain to me still fully like what he's experiencing. And of course, for him, it's like a normal experience. So I don't think he even thinks to mention different things. But, you know, I think it's a lot like, oh, he feel like he has to go. He has to go. So, you know, go to the toilet immediately. Because whenever he tries to hold on, he can't. And he does still have like more of the softer side of poop. So, you know, the joke of like never trust a fart when you have Hirschsprungs. Because oftentimes he's got a little shart happening. And we have since found these little liners, because I know some parents will get like panty liners and stuff. I don't love the idea of Jack having to use those, just like as far as like peers. Like, I don't know, I get really nervous about him and his peers later on in school when he's older. And also, I don't always love the chemicals that are in, you know, feminine hygiene products. And so I did find in the Hirschsprungs group, there's a few on Facebook, but there's, it's kind of funny, but they're called Skitties. And I'm like, that's kind of mean. Like,
it's not the best name in the world. Oops.
I'm like, Hirschsprung kids, you know, they get skid marks often. And we're calling these things Skitties, but, you know, they are nice because they are thick enough to keep his underwear safe, but thin enough that he doesn't really notice them. Like, it feels like cotton. It's like a stretchy feeling cotton. But there have been a few times that, you know, at school they've had to help him change his underwear, and they didn't like warm it up as they're like trying to rub it into the underwear. And so it got like stuck to his skin. So I'm like, well, luckily I still have adhesive remover spray from when he had a colostomy, because the poor guy, it got super stuck to his skin and in sensitive areas, I'll just say. And he, yeah, I think he was traumatized from that for a little bit. But those are a really great option. They really save, because you can just peel it off and throw it away. And, you know, it just saves laundry and saves underwear sometimes. And, I mean, he's been doing pretty great. We still have many poop episodes. You know, it's still like a learning curve for him. And also trying to figure out like things that he's more sensitive to in his diet, trying to avoid it. Like we have a constant battle. Like he loves sugar, like most kids, and trying to remind him, hey, you can't just eat a whole bunch of candy because it really wrecks your system. And like, I remember there was one, not this last Thanksgiving, but the one before, Jack's cousin had been trick-or-treating and got a ton of candy. Like, seriously, I've never seen a kid with so much candy after Halloween. And she just, like, had a pile of candy in her room. And Jack would go in there and get candy and go to a different cousin each time to be like, hey, can you open this for me? So he had so much candy. And, of course, he was, like, full, so he wasn't eating any of the food from Thanksgiving. And that was probably the sickest he's ever been. Like, usually when we would need to start doing irrigations for him, because, you know, if your kid gets, if you get like a respiratory illness, sometimes it can affect your digestive system and everything when you have Hirschsprungs. And anytime we would have to start doing irrigations, it was only for like a couple days at most. But after that Thanksgiving, it was like, I almost took him to the hospital several times because he was just like sick for like a full week. And it, like, the sickest he's ever been. But, you know, like, again, luckily we have an amazing colorectal clinic. And so I talked to them a lot. They called me a lot to check on him. So we didn't end up having to go to the hospital or anything. But it was intense. So now I'm like, he's old enough that he kind of remembers, like, oh, yeah, I got really sick. I'm like, yeah, you can't just eat a whole bunch of candy. Like, you get super gurgly, really loud, really bloated, and it hurts. And, but, you know, that sugar is just hard to say no to. But, yeah, that's basically how it's been for him. We're still learning things and figuring things out. And I, you know, since he only went to preschool, but in the States they have something called a 504 plan when they're in like a public school. And so it's like accommodations, and I wanted to get it started early. So, I mean, at this stage in preschool, a lot of the kids need help with going to the bathroom. It's common for kids to have accidents still. But I got that in place so that later on down the road, it's already kind of in the system to be like, hey, like, teachers can't tell him he can't go to the bathroom. Like, if he needs to go to the bathroom, like, he needs to be able to go. Or, you know, have access to maybe the nurse's restroom if he wants more privacy. Because, you know, when he goes poop, it's often quite loud. And, you know, it's fine in the family. We joke about it and laugh about it sometimes. Like, oh my gosh, mom, did you hear it that time? But, you know, maybe some peers will make fun of him.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast, or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.